please do not turn off. Please do not. Just do not exit the podcast. Just stay in the podcast.
Please listen carefully.
Hi, everybody, and welcome in to the Off the Top of My Head podcast, a podcast just about anything and everything. I find interesting people with interesting topics and record in interesting places, and it's all off the top of my head. So whatever you're doing right now, thank you for bringing me with you. And now, let's get in to today's episode. This podcast is sponsored by VT Photography. VT Photography brings over 19 years of photography experience, venturing on long hikes, capturing the still of pre-dawn, and enduring inclement weather. VT Photography brings you beautiful images of our national parks and beyond. Images are available on the VT Photography website, and all prints are available printed, matted, framed, and ready to hang. These prints adorn the walls of homes, businesses, retail spaces, and also make a great gift. Visit vtphotography.zenfolio.com. That's vtphotography.zenfolio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome into this episode of the Off the Top of My Head podcast. My name is Bill. Once again, we're bringing you another episode from the other Farm and Forge, and I am here. We're going to have to figure out what we're going to call this episode, but I am here once again with the most interesting man in Boyertown.
MIB, the international edition, right? Because isn't that current for MIB?
Yeah, well, let's do it. Okay, we'll do it, the international edition. Sounds good. So we're here winding down the week and enjoying a nice beverage. It's fall here in the Northeast now, officially, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty sure. Yeah, it's the fall. So we're enjoying a nice Freecon Farms. I have the cider sweet. It's naturally sweetened with this one here. Our sweetest cider yet, all natural, featuring a blend of New World apples with orchard honey.
I have a nice crisp Boyertown tap water with a slice of lime.
I see that. I see that with a paper straw.
With a paper straw.
Because.
So kudos.
Yes.
The other farm for the paper straw.
Yeah, keeping the environment clean. And I, believe it or not, I'm going to disclose something to you that we didn't talk about prior. I was actually at Freecon Farms over the weekend.
Somebody, were you picking apples?
We were not picking apples. No, what we were picking was apple cider whoopie pies.
Oh, they sound good.
We were picking them off the tray.
And
putting
them
in the bag for purchase.
So. Yeah, like if you catch, as you're moving into the fall at Freecon, obviously at the orchard, you can do all kinds of great stuff, cherries and peaches and apples.
Right.
But then at the store, they have like peach cobblers and peach donuts, and then they move into like cherry pies and kinds of apples. It's like you walk in there, you gain 20 pounds.
Just by walking
just
in the
by
door.
Walking
just by
closing.
Yeah. So we wound up getting an apple cider whoopie pie. Apple cider donut whoopie pie, an apple cider donut because we wanted to try it without the whoops. And then we got a apple cake, I think it was.
Ooh.
Yeah, an apple crumb cake.
It was
legit. I think we got a pumpkin spice cookie, and we got one other thing. It might have been a biscotti or something like that. But
it's that time of year, pumpkin spice.
Yeah,
man.
It's all the rage nowadays. So,
before we move into the topics, I want to tell you that one of the most interesting advertising campaigns, and I actually thought of stealing this idea. A.D. Moyer, after driving along 422,
I saw this.
Says that they have pumpkin spice lumber.
I saw that.
So I just want everyone to know that I have pumpkin spice retirement planning and pumpkin spice life insurance.
Yes.
And pumpkin spice annuity. So if anyone's looking for anything pumpkin spice in that market,
yes.
I can help them out.
Yes, it's the flavor. So for those listening who are not in our area, A.D. Moyer is a lumber and hardware store. And they, like Rob said, they have a billboard on the side. I did see that the other day.
That's great.
And then what did it say at the bottom? It said, just kidding or something like that, right? So Rob's enjoying a salad. He's been kind enough to join me, and I know he hasn't had lunch today, so we're trying to kill two birds with one stone. So
save two birds with one basket, please.
What is it?
Save two birds with one basket.
Save two, yes.
My daughter would be highly offended by you killing birds.
Save two birds with one basket. I think we've talked about that on a previous podcast. I don't know which one. We've done so many at this point. Bad things happen to good animals. I specifically remember that quote as well. So you're eating a Mediterranean bowl. So if I can get everybody's mouth watering who's listening, the Mediterranean bowl has chickpeas, artichoke hearts, Kalamata olives, cucumbers, cherry tomato, red onion, tzatziki sauce, mint, and local sheep's milk cheese.
And it is delicious.
Is that one of your faves here?
This is a favorite.
Okay.
It's a healthy option for those looking for a healthy option.
Sure.
And the mint is a nice surprise. Local goat cheese is phenomenal.
Cool. All right, good. Well, I have been gathering a list of topics. I know there's several that we didn't get to in our last episode together. So I've been holding quite a few and been adding to it as time goes on. So would you like me to go in order or just jump around randomly?
Hit the randomizer button. Let's see what happens.
Okay. Can we get a sound effect for that?
Give me the Scooby-Doo. Yeah. That's the win, lose, or draw.
Yeah. Okay, so have you heard of this place called Waxing the City?
No. Is this a hair removal place?
So when I say Waxing the City, what comes to mind?
Hair removal.
And you are spot on. This place is called Waxing the City.
I was hoping it was maybe a record shop, but then I was like,
That would be a great name. I mean, vinyl is making a comeback. Yeah, this place is called Waxing the City. I just thought that was a odd name.
And where is this located?
This actually is in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
It's right on 202 near Henderson Road. I always happen to be sitting at the traffic light, and I look off to my left, and I see Waxing the City, and I'm like, there goes a podcast topic right there.
Yeah.
So.
Is that like a... Does the logo look like a play on... What was that show? Sex...
Oh, Sex in the City?
Sex in the City?
No, I don't
think... Was it Sex In or Sex End?
Sex In.
Was it?
In, I-N. Okay. Yeah.
Never watched.
Yeah. All right, so I'm looking here. So, yeah, so Waxing the City is a thing. It says here... It says... I'm looking on my iPad at the same time.
Is it like one of these things? This is... We need a...
It says, Waxing the City provides you with an expert wax and comfortable experience. That means easing pre-wax worries and offering post-wax instructions. You will leave feeling a boost of confidence with no hairs left behind.
Maybe so the pre-wax is the wax on and the post-wax is
the wax off. Right. All right, well, maybe that's all we need to talk about with Waxing the City. I just found the name extremely... There's
a whole
thing there, right?
There's definitely something there.
Yeah. Okay. You want to hit the randomizer button again?
Yeah.
Would you like to do the sound effect this time?
Beep, boop, pop, pop, boop.
It was good. All right. I want to tell you a story that personally happened to me. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So my
Does
wife...
Does this involve waxing?
It does not. So my wife was away on vacation, and part of my routine is to get up in the morning and work out. After my workout, I then go for a cool down walk. Excuse me. It's about a mile and a half in the morning. Just a good opportunity, again, just to cool down and do my thing, right? So it's in the middle of the summer. It's a humid morning out, and... Inevitably, when you have a human morning, there's bugs, right?
Right, yeah. It's Pennsylvania.
So I'm walking along, and these bugs are getting near my face. So they're just like, you know, they're bouncing against my face, and they're hovering around my head. And I just, it's obviously, it's distracting, it's uncomfortable. So I'm sitting there, I'm doing a little swipe with my hand in front of my face. And I'm just kind of going back and forth. And they're obviously not going away. I mean, they don't ever do. It's just a temporary situation. I mean, if I had a tail, I probably would. I would wag it and, help them go away. But so I was swiping back and forth, like, diagonally. And then for whatever reason, I changed my swipe pattern.
That was a very interesting affectation you just did.
And I went, let's go back and forth diagonally, and then I changed my swipe pattern to back to front.
Okay.
Well, when I went from back to front, I swiped my glasses right off my head. Okay?
He can't see without his glasses.
I cannot see. Put his glasses on, because he can't see without his glasses. Okay, I am blind as a bat without my glasses. So picture this now. So here I am. I hear the glasses land, but have no idea where they are. Okay, I'm dripping sweat.
And I will point out that they have somewhat of a camouflage pattern to them. They're tortuga, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No. So these are tortoise.
Tortoise.
Okay. We'll get into that in a little while. No, these other ones. These are other ones. I wear an older pair when I work out.
Okay.
Not so, you know, just to make sure that I don't, sully these, I guess you'd say. So the older pair that I had were a black wire frame, okay, which, you know, it's fine, and this landed on the street. So now I'm in my neighborhood. Now, thankfully, there's not a lot of traffic, but I literally cannot see.
So you're looking for black wire frames on the black street with clear glass.
Correct.
Without your glasses on.
Without my glasses on. So if somebody had a camera and was taking a look at me doing this, I am on my hands and knees, and I'm trying not to step, and I'm trying not to, like, everything I'm doing, I'm gliding, just so I can, hopefully I can catch the glasses,
right,
and say, okay, here they are,
and not,
sort of
like,
thing.
You know, drag them across the concrete.
Right, or crush them.
I have to make up a story and tell your wife an icicle fell off the garage and hit you and broke them.
Right. So I'm sitting there, I'm looking for my, I mean, if you were watching me in the middle of the street, this had to have looked ridiculous.
Now you live in a development, correct?
Yeah, it's not a development, but there's a group of houses that are on, and it's a street that doesn't get a lot of traffic.
So this happened in the summer?
This happened in the summer, and this was at like 6:15 in the morning.
So I don't know how this hasn't made it onto social media, because everybody has a camera in front of their house anymore.
right. Yeah, you're right. So thankfully, there was a woman who normally walks two dogs. Her name's Lynn. So I knew that it was her because I could see the two dogs, and I knew that she walked two dogs. And she said good morning to me, and I said good morning, and she goes, "Are you looking for something?" I'm on my hands and knees. So I said, and I said, yes. I go, my glasses. She goes, they're right there. I was like, where? Where exactly are my glasses? So she goes, they're right there by your foot. And I go, Lynn, I need your help. I said, I need you. Can you come? And she's like, yeah. She's like, I'll come over. She's like, so then she goes, oh, she's like, I'm sorry. And I go, what are you sorry for? I go, you're helping me. She's like, they're in two pieces.
Oh.
So they totally split, I guess, like right in the middle or whatever it was. So I was, I then proceeded to continue to walk with a monocle. I was just walking with the one lens
like
on.
Mr. Peanut.
Yeah, without the top hat. But on top of that, it was just one of those things where I kept walking and came back. But man, I'm blind as a bat.
Yeah, no, the whole glasses thing is like a new 6 months, I would say. It's the first time I put on a pair of reading glasses to try and, like, and then I realized, like, oh, wow, I'm missing a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
My watch. I put the reading glasses on and look at my watch. I'm like, wow, there's a ton of detail in there that I didn't know existed.
I can actually
I look at my phone and I'm like, wow, the quality of that image is
It's amazing what corrective lenses do.
And,
right?
You know, and but the slippery slope of needing them went quick.
Yeah. So are you in progressives here?
No, they're still readers.
Okay.
And they do exactly what I need them to do. But I will say my optometrist warned me. About a year ago, if you don't start wearing them now, it will go downhill quickly.
Ooh, okay.
And I was like, well, I always kind of heard that once you start wearing them, She's like, no, no, no.
Just the opposite.
Just the opposite.
Yeah.
She's like, you're going to continually strain your eyes. Yeah. You're always looking at technology. If you don't start wearing them now, it's going to get progressively worse a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And it did. It got bad. It was like, I woke up one morning and just, like, couldn't see it. Wow. And I started thinking maybe I had a medical condition. I was like, do your eyes normally go bad this quickly?
Yeah, like, all of a sudden?
Yeah, like...
So mine had progressively been getting worse, and I finally had an eye exam where she goes, you're going to need progressives. And I'm like, this sucks. I'm like, I don't think, you know, like I always made fun of my father for
right.
not being able to see stuff, you know, and here I am. I'm in the same situation, but I'm adjusting to them. I have a really, really bad or strong prescription. And I was concerned about, you know, everybody telling me, well, you're not going to be able to see peripherally, and this is going to be really difficult for you to make that transition because your thing's so bad. But this eye doctors that I went to locally actually did a pretty good job in navigating it. And since this is a, I feel like this is a very high quality lens, and this transition hasn't been nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be to progressives.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, so it's been good. And again, even with, you know, I went to plastic frames for the first time. So they didn't have any nose pads, and I had to order some nose pads. So there was a lot of things going on with the glasses, but
right.
But I like them. They're like a tortoise color. These are the ones that transition. So if I walk outside, they'll get, you know, quote, dark.
Right.
And they won't totally black out.
No, look, I like the frames. I mean, very similar style to mine.
Yeah, they are. But they make my eyes comfortable. I'm not straining. So.
Well, that's why I was getting headaches.
Oh, were you really?
From, like, all day, I'd be like, I don't get headaches. Like, why am I all of a sudden getting headaches?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, like I said, we're at the other farm and forge here, and I think they just turned on some background music, so you might be hearing that, which is not a big deal. Just adds a little...
It's waxing music.
It's waxing music, yeah. we are waxing this podcast. Can we come up with a waxing the podcast?
No.
Is that the title?
Waxing?
Is that the title?
Could
or most interesting man in Boyertown?
Waxing prophetic.
International.
Maybe waxing pathetic.
Yeah.
Depending on how well this goes.
Right, right. Okay, is it my turn to hit the randomizer?
Hit the randomizer. That was good.
That was good, right?
We extended it. We went like an extra turn.
Okay, so I don't know what made me I don't know what made me think about this. And this can go in a lot of directions, so this may either be a 20-minute conversation or a 2-minute conversation. But I was contemplating what the purpose... I'm going to wait for you to finish chewing.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was contemplating what the purpose of lips were.
Of the actual lips on our face.
Lips on our face, yeah.
Hmm.
So can you guess?
I would have to guess... that it has something to do with attracting a mate. I'm just trying to think of like, well, not. I was gonna say like, not all animals have lips, though, right? Do they?
Or do they? I think some of them probably have thinner lips.
Thinner lips, sure.
To some degree.
I don't know that my lips are any more sensitive than the skin surrounding them.
Okay.
I don't know, is it a transition from skin to the, like the exterior skin to the interior skin of the roof of your mouth? Like there's some reason that there's a differentiation there that prevents like the fluid from your mouth constantly just running all over your
running
face.
Running all over. So let me read you the...
Oh, there's an official...
This is like, yeah, it's unofficially official, but... I just was contemplating this. So lips are a visible body part at the mouth of many animals, including humans. Lips are soft, movable, obviously, and serve as the opening for food intake and in the articulation of sound and speech.
Hmm.
So human lips are a tactile sensory organ and can be erogenous zone when used in kissing.
All right.
Right?
I can see how they're involved in speech, obviously, the shaping of your mouth.
Right, but if you
didn't have lips, could you still...
That's what I'm asking. Like, could you... Would it be possible? Would it be possible to have the same type of speech pattern? Or does that sound, like, more kind of...
Right. Yeah, but when we purse our lips like that, that's not our normal light. So we're also drawing in our muscles.
That's true.
So if we didn't have muscles, if we didn't have lips and we weren't pursing them, then we wouldn't be drawing in those muscles, so it wouldn't change the shape of our mouth when we're trying to formulate sound.
Plus, we would look a little weird.
We would look weird.
Okay.
I want to Photoshop that. I want to take the pigment out of my lips and see what I look like without lips.
And just totally without lips. Would you be all teeth at that point?
No. It would just be one continual color.
One continual what?
Color.
Oh, color.
Yeah, as I cover up my lips.
Okay. You know, gotcha. All right.
Take away my ability to formulate a word.
Yeah. All right. All right. Do you want to hit the randomizer? Right, we got all kinds of effects today. All right. How about, are you ever laying down, either whatever, on the couch, in the bed, and you're looking at the phone above your head? Like we have to hold the phone above your head.
While you're laying down. And trying to figure out why is my arm like getting cold because there's no blood flow in it, kind of a situation.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or have you ever fallen asleep and dropped the phone on your face?
Never dropped the phone on my face.
You've never done, dude, I do that,
never done that
almost on a nightly basis.
I will occasionally go to bed and try and catch up on things before I go to bed. Like, you know, watching something or doing something. And I've fallen asleep or started to nod to the point where I've dropped the phone.
Okay.
But it's not, I'm not holding it above me.
Yeah.
I'm holding it more at, like, an angle.
See, I'm holding it above my face.
Yeah.
Above my face. And if I don't hold it right, it will drop straight on my face. So I know this sounds weird, and I'll never be able to describe this on the podcast, but I hold it in a certain way where if it falls out of my hand, it'll actually flip forward and fall more like on my chin and neck area.
Why don't you get one of those things from As Seen on TV that goes around your neck and holds your phone?
It holds
the
phone?
Yes.
So then when I rotate over, I'm going to wind up crushing the phone.
Yeah, that's one of
those. But I do this thing where I hold the phone like this, so I have my middle finger on the top of the phone and my thumb on the bottom.
Okay.
Right? And I got it. Okay, so I'm actually shifting and doing this. And I'm up above like this. So I got my thumb on the lower right-hand corner.
So you've got like this little like pivot point there.
This little pivot point. So I'm sitting here and I'm scrolling, doing what I need to do here. So if it winds up falling, it just...
It does that.
It does that, and it doesn't fall flat on my face. So I've had that happen many a time,
yeah,
where it's fallen on my face.
Did you ever consider like casting your phone to your TV?
and just doing it that way?
Because you don't have to hold the TV above
no,
your head.
I have a dumb TV. So, but I mean dumb TV, not smart TV.
Right.
That won't do that, unfortunately. Although there's all kinds of hookups now, probably.
Yeah, I think we do actually, right? Do it not through our TV directly. We do it through our Amazon Fire Stick.
Okay.
TV,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, it's my turn for the randomizer.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever notice? So we live in an area. We're on the East Coast, but we're very, very far inland, right? So we're not even close to the ocean. When I say close, we're at least 2 hours, probably.
Yeah, we've probably got another decade until Philadelphia becomes oceanfront.
Right. Yeah, just a decade.
Our lifetime, for sure.
So what are the birds you typically see down the shore?
Oh, the nasty seagulls.
The seagulls,
yeah.
Right? Okay. So let me ask you a question. Why do they hang out in parking lots?
Well...
Why are they here and not down the shore?
They are...
They're
commuters, and they carpool, and they are waiting for their ride to show up.
I mean, seriously.
They are opportunist seagulls.
Yeah, but to come from the beach, like, is this their version of a summer home?
That's right.
Like, let me go.
Well, the beach is overcrowded with seagulls. I'm going
yeah,
to the suburbs.
Right.
Gotta get out of there.
That's what I'm thinking.
Can't even go to Fry anymore. No, I really just think I don't think it's a migratory thing. I just think it's like they start, there's so many seagulls at some of the shore points, it's ridiculous. And at certain points on the shore point, at certain times of the year on shore point, it's like unbearable.
Yeah.
In some locations.
So do you think seagulls...
I think they get away from each other. I think they get away from those overly populated seagull areas and look like, where are other opportunities? And they find those opportunities like dumps. You ever go to a dump?
Oh, sure.
There's tons of seagulls at a dump.
Like, so you're saying from a competition, a food competition standpoint.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't think seagulls have always been here?
No.
You think they transferred here?
I think they're moving on up, looking for a handout.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because somebody told me one time they went to Alaska, and when they got there, like, one of the things on their bucket list to do was to go see a bald eagle.
Okay.
And they got there, and they were in the hotel, and the guy was like, yeah, you know, I want to set up a thing so I can go see some bald eagles. And the guy behind the counter, like, said to him, like, you can pay $300 and I can get you a guide and I'll take you out in the woods and you'll see a bald eagle.
Oh, really?
He said, or you can talk to the maintenance guy out back by the shed and he'll take you down to the dump and there's hundreds of them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so it was an observation that I've made for a very long time and was just curious. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer, but... They're just in the park. I'm like, why are they here in the middle of the parking lot in the suburbs of Philadelphia when they should be down the shore?
Yeah.
Or maybe that's what I'm relating. I'm relating to them being down the shore and not here. Maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe they started here
and moved down the shore.
Yeah. So
it's always senior week for them.
All right, can I have a randomizer, please? That was like...
I was going to do it with my straw, but
we went through
the problem that we talked about, I was going to do the whole, like, you know, the slide whistle thing on my straw. But that problem that we talked about earlier with paper straws.
Oh, it's now starting to...
My paper straw has now collapsed.
All right.
So
I'm
disappointed that I couldn't slide whistle.
Sorry to hear that. So you slide whistled across two topics.
I did.
So let's talk about the Red Solo cups.
Oh, yes.
You familiar with the Red Solo Cup?
Absolutely.
Right? So
no matter how much money you make, when you party with a Red Solo Cup.
Yeah, party with a Red Solo Cup. Okay, so on these Red Solo Cups, so when you're holding them, it's not just a flat...
It used to be, but not anymore.
Double
indentations.
Right. So do you know what those indentations are for?
Because now the cups are 11 ounces as opposed to 12 ounces. Like, a pound of coffee is only 12 ounces anymore. I don't know.
So they are measurements.
They
are measurements on the cup. So let me Google this real quick.
No, I know exactly what you mean. So, like, you fill it up to here. Now, there's no indicator lines, but it's actually just a stepping. If you fill it up to here, it's this many ounces.
Correct.
So if you were putting ice in, you would scoop it to the top of that first indent, and it would be like, this is...
Correct. So the first indent on it, which is all the way down by the bottom, okay, is 1 ounce.
Okay.
So that traditionally would be for...
Put a shot in before you put your...
You could put
your Captain and Coke.
Liquor in there, mouthwash, chocolate syrup to make chocolate milk, whatever, the 1 ounce. That next line up is 5 ounces, which would be equivalent to a glass of wine, maybe a standard serving of cereal, daily juice serving for kids. Okay, so that's 5 ounces.
Okay.
So now if you fill it to there's a series of lines that are up top. So as you go from the bottom, now you got the 1 ounce line, the 5 ounce line. The next line is the 12 ounce line. That's where the beer goes. That's where the beer goes. It's also the amount of water you should drink 5 times a day. You can make a Shirley Temple. You can add 1 ounce of grenadine, 5 ounces of Sprite. So,
my kid's favorite drink,
the Shirley Temple,
the Roy Rogers and the Shirley Temple.
What's the Roy Rogers?
It's Coke and cherry juice.
Oh, okay. Never heard that one. All right, sounds good. So that's what the lines are on the. So it's a 1 ounce, a 5 ounce, and a 12 ounce.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So now you can. Now you can shuffle that around at parties.
Show off at parties. I'll be like, could you please pour me 5 ounces?
5 ounces, exactly.
Of Boyertown's best tap water.
With a non-paper straw.
So I have a topic, if you'll randomize.
Okay, oh yeah, let me randomize. Ready?
That's very good.
Thank you.
So I know you've played sports before. Have you ever coached sports before?
So I was the assistant coach for a soccer team.
Okay.
Yes. So I believe it was 8 and 9 year olds.
Okay, that's fun.
And it was like a pack mentality, right? So they just followed
the
ball.
They're like on the cusp.
Right.
Of learning spacing. And
yeah, so towards, it was interesting because the person who was the coach was one of my best friends. And he asked me if I wanted to be an assistant coach. And I said, yeah, sure. And I said, well, wait a second. I go, you know nothing about sports. And you know nothing about sports. And he goes, yeah. He goes, but I figured, he goes, how hard can it be? And I said, and then it dawned on me. I said, oh, I said, I get it. I said, you're an ex-military guy.
Oh, yeah.
So you know drills. I said, so we're going to run drills, and then you can coach. I said, I got it. So I wound up being an assistant coach. So I think in the beginning, like I said, it was a big pack mentality thing. And we might have went like, it was probably like 1-5 or something like that. I don't even know what our record was. We weren't great.
Right.
But finally it started to click that we even, quote, had a, quote, system where we started to separate a little bit and figure out where everybody needed to be positioned. And we never clear the ball up the middle.
There you go. Key.
If somebody's coming down the side, don't be afraid to just kick it out of bounds and just we'll get the throw in. We'll just defend the throw in sort of thing. They were talking about the goalie and coming out of the net a little bit to cut down the angle on a shot. So there was a lot that we were starting to get going. And I think we just, honestly, I think we might have finished 500 that season. Went like 6-6 or something. So, but it was a good experience. And I don't have kids.
Right.
So I was communicating differently than my buddy was. You know what I mean? I just didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
I mean, kids are kids, but still, I don't have a lot of practice with it. I have a cat. But,
yeah.
You know, I tell her to do things. She just ignores me.
Well, there you go. You've got practice for the kids.
I got practice for the kids.
Nice. I would venture to guess that they probably... It's one of those things where if you're giving a presentation and you tell people you don't like public speaking, it becomes very apparent that you're not a good public speaker.
Mm.
But if you don't tell a kid that, hey, I don't have any kids or I don't feel comfortable talking to kids, I don't necessarily know that they would
even know.
Recognize that. They'd be like, it's just another adult.
Yeah.
And they're all weird. And,
yeah, right. Yeah, it's another guy I don't have to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. No, but the reason I asked is because obviously I coach a couple of teams. In fact, one team I've been coaching for a very long time, and I'm lucky enough to say that, maybe the 5 or 6 years that I've been with this one particular group of boys, and they're now in middle school and high school, and they're playing at the high school level and the middle school teams, I never had anyone get hurt.
Oh.
Like, I've had injuries.
Okay.
But I never had anyone get hurt where they were out. So this season started off for me with one player dislocating a knee prior to the season. So I lost him before the season even started.
How did he dislocate his knee?
He's got some developmental issues, actually,
okay,
that they're identifying. Like, he's actually dislocated both of his knees, and he's going to wind up probably having some level of surgery.
Wow.
Right. Okay. Great kid. He's one of those kids like where, they say it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the fight in the dog, and he's one of those kids. He was a goer. He would go hard. He understood the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he was more vinegar, not one of the highest skilled players. I don't think if I said his name, he wouldn't be offended me saying that, but he would go hard. And because he would go hard, I always appreciated that.
Yeah, well, we wish him the best.
And then so I only rostered 14 kids for the fall.
And remind me again, how many you need a field?
11. So you play 10 in the field and one with a keeper.
Okay.
Right? So you have 11 on the field. So I rostered 14. And so I lost him, so now I'm down to 13, which means I have 2 subs. And the first week, of soccer right before our first game, my right winger, which we actually call my attacking midfielder, tears his ankle, and he's out for 8 weeks.
And how old are these kids again?
They are, they're called U15, so they're all born in 2005.
Okay.
All right, so he tears his right ankle playing soccer, blocking a shot. So he's out for 8 weeks.
Okay.
So he's down, so now I'm down to 12 players.
And how long is the season?
Our season is 8 weeks.
Okay. So he's basically out for the season.
He's basically out for the season, okay. Both of them. Like, the first one was, hey, it's going to be 4 weeks in the you know, in the equipment, and then 4 weeks of therapy, and then we'll be back.
Right.
And then the other kid was, hey, it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks with the braces, and then 2 to 3 weeks of therapy, and then, you know, maybe we'll be back. Now, the good thing is, the second kid, I'm actually seeing question marks on my calendar for him from his parents as to whether or not he's going to be able to make practices. But, you know, I've already had conversations with the parents, like, we're going to be very slow coming back.
Sure.
Because, you know, I always say, like, to the parents, like, these boys are like puppies. Mm-hmm. You don't say sit and stay. They just don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like trying to turn a racehorse into a farm horse. They want to run.
But even if he can't play or doesn't feel well enough, would he still come to the practices and be part of the team?
He will come to the practices. But my job will be, like, to monitor him and say, like, no contact for you.
Yeah.
We'll work on passing and this drill and that drill, and we'll do this and we'll do that. So those are injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're fairly substantial, right? The knee thing, obviously, there's nothing we could do about that. It wasn't soccer-related. The other foot thing, yes, it was. But I also coach another team, and my keeper got his arm broken during a game. During a game that I was coaching.
So how did that happen?
This kid is, again, I won't mention any names, but just a phenomenal, phenomenal keeper.
Mm-hmm.
I always say he's like a spider monkey that lands like a marshmallow.
Okay.
Like, this kid can jump 6 feet in the air, grab a ball that's going 40 miles an hour with the softest of hands, pull it into his body and land on the ground like an infant falling into a pillow. It's the craziest thing to watch. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it is. The level
of
talent.
Skill.
Kid, and he's a very smart player. He's got good foot skills. He's got a good head for the game. So he was coming out to challenge for a ball. So he was sliding, doing everything right, sliding for the ball. And him and the attacker legitimately got there 50-50. And the attacker tried to clear the ball through him, and he's trying to wrap the ball up. The ball pops out, and I think as he turned to dive on the ball again, the attacker went to attack the ball again.
Mm.
And in that motion of trying to get to the ball, he kind of like either kicked through or ran through his arm. You know, when there's bodies moving around,
things happen.
Very hard to tell. You know, he has five people, he'd probably get five different stories. But I didn't realize, right, I've had the kids with the knees and the ankles and the hips and the this and the that, and they're out and they're hurt. But I didn't realize how impactful, like, that kid getting hurt was going to be to me. I was like, and first of all, let me tell you this, the kid was a monster. Like, his arm was, like, legit broke, not looking good. He's laying there, and he's just, like, a rock. The cops that show up are just like, you're okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
And they're like, okay, you're in any pain? He's like, yeah, my arm's a little sore. When I tell you, the first kid that saw him literally ran away from him.
Really?
When he saw what, like, had happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I knew. Watching all the kind of go down, when, like, the ball eventually got cleared out of bounds, and I saw the keeper laying there, and I saw the kid go over from the other team, actually, to ask him, like, to look at him and ask him if he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid, like, took, like, three, not steps back, like, three jumps back, and, like, was like, oh, that's not right, kind of a thing. But this kid was just like a rock, you know, laying there waiting for the EMTs and everything to show up, which is ultimately, you know, what happened.
Okay.
But just a great kid. You know, he's got a casted arm. Luckily, he didn't need any surgery. But what I'm starting to realize, like, obviously, I've got my own kids and my family, and anything happens to them, I'm like, oh, you know.
Sure, you're a little more heightened.
Worried.
Yeah.
But these are kids, like, now I'm getting to the point where I know these kids for a number of years. sometimes not directly, but indirectly. Like, we may have practiced with them when they were on other teams. We may have scrimmaged against them when they were on other teams. And you become very close.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever remember, like, I played some sports growing up. I wrestled a little bit in high school. Didn't play soccer in high school, but never had that really, like, close connection with people through, like, a sport like that. So as a coach, it feels a little weird, right? Because they're my players. But at
sure.
the same time, I almost feel like there's like a parental
sort of thing to it. Yeah. Well, look, they're coming to the beginning of the season with practice or whatever, and you're molding them into, so it's no different than raising a child. But you're molding a team. You have a series of abilities, and you're trying to mold it into this team towards one goal. So you can't help but take some personal... you're vested in this.
Yeah,
right?
And
you're
it
totally
is.
Vested.
It's like a super high level personal interest in like their well being and their success. And but at the same time, I get to practice twice in a week with a bunch of 15-year-old boys, and that's like ridiculously fun. Like,
oh,
because,
sure.
You know, it's
yeah.
like, you know, kind of like
yeah.
reminds you of what it's like to be
a kid again.
You
feed off their energy.
Yeah, oh,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're being goofy, and they're all getting to that point now where they're telling goofy, like, 15-year-old boy jokes.
Right. So, telling them about the latest game of Fortnite. And so, if I have my count correctly, does that leave you with exactly 11 players?
So, no, the goalie was from one of the school teams.
Okay.
I've had over the years the good fortune of building wonderful relationships with my players and their parents. And I've had boys who have developed to a level where, I feel like, maybe they can't benefit from the coaching that I'm providing them anymore. And then the teams we play against and the divisions that we play at maybe aren't the most beneficial for their growth. So some of them have gone on to premier teams.
Okay.
Through our developmental program, mm-hmm. they become great players, and then they've gone on to do, better things. I lost two this year in the spring going into the fall. So, again, one of the weird things is at this age, most of the teams, a lot of the boys are playing high school ball. So clubs don't generally field U15 boys teams mm-hmm. at the level that we play at.
Okay.
Because they can't get enough kids together. So they wait until the winter and they start playing winter soccer.
Okay.
So I was able to kind of talk to the parents and those kids and say, like, hey, would you be interested in coming back and playing with us for the fall?
Right.
Got their other team to release them, sign them with us.
Right.
And then at the end of the season, we'll kind of let them go. So we're back to like 13.
Okay.
Which is a happy number.
Okay.
And the good thing about that is they're also at a point in their lives where they're going to soon be expected to play 90 minutes, some of them, without a sub.
Sure.
So I've been conditioning them for a long time.
Sure. Well, I played soccer when I was younger, and there was many a game where I had to play the entire game, and there was many a game where we even played shorthanded, like where I was the center, and that was it. I had no wings.
Right.
And we just had the halfbacks. Like, there was like five or six of us on the field all together.
Okay.
I mean, it was some rough going.
Yeah.
But I remember this coach of mine. So I don't even know if he's alive or not. His name was Dominic Cefalo.
Okay,
Dominic Cefalo, Italian guy. He would yell at me. He would yell at me
for
not doing what he asked. For not doing what he asked. So look, when I was a soccer player, I didn't have a ton of ability. But I think I was probably similar to that other kid. I played with a ton of heart.
Right.
Right? Like, I always knew I had to press forward and what I needed to do. But I'll never forget this one game. And I still talk to my parents to this day about it. Look, he's Italian. He came from Italy. So they're very passionate about, they call football over there, right?
Yeah,
very passionate about football over there. So I was bringing it up on the left wing one time. And I'm right by the sideline where he's at. And I'm pushing this thing up. And me and the defender, we're going at it. And I'm pushing it, I'm pushing it, I'm pushing it, I'm pushing it, I'm pushing it. And he says, Bill, what are you doing, Bill? He goes, center the ball, Bill. You know Pele. So he's like caught by me trying to do all this
Stop footwork. With the fancy footwork, kid. Yes, pass the ball.
Right. It's pretty much what it was.
Well, in that vein, I'll tell you, I have been known to say to my boys, if I wanted to see you dribble, I would put out cones.
Yeah, that's all true, right?
Yeah, we're a small space passing team. We are not a dribbling team.
Yeah.
You know? I'm glad that you have the dribbling skill. We will work on that.
Right.
But the object of the game here, what we need to accomplish is 5 and 7 yard passing, move the ball up the field, and then we're going to attack.
Yeah. But I was just, that moment stuck out for me. And again, my parents, my father will still repeat it to this day. He knows it word for word.
That's great.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, he was passionate. When you're a kid, you sort of listen to the instruction, but, you know, at the end of the day, you're just out there to play.
Well, was there ever a point in your life where you were doing something like a sport? Baseball, football, soccer, whatever, or something, mm-hmm. that the whole time you were doing it, you had no concept, despite the fact that you were receiving instruction, of what you were supposed to be doing. And then one day, years later, it just dawned on you and you went, if I had understood that that's what they wanted me to do.
Right.
What a different world it would have been.
So I think, to that point, I think soccer might be a good example. And what I was mentioning earlier with that pack mentality, like where they talk about separation from the ball. Like I had a hard time grasping that concept at first, that there needed to be some separation. And I was always standing by a defender.
Right.
Like I wasn't trying to get open, essentially. But then when I finally understood that concept,
right.
You know, things started to happen a little bit. You know, I started to get the ball. And I used to be able to put it
all by myself.
Yeah. I need to put, you know, put it on net. You could just see the field a little bit bigger. You could see the space a little bit bigger. So,
yeah. So I'm like always like the physics of things. I was always big into that. So, like, when I went from being like a guy when I was like a kid who would like grab my grandfather's clubs and go to Juniata Park and, mm-hmm. you know, try and play golf mm-hmm. to where I was like, I had friends who wanted to go out and play against each other competitively. I was like, I'm going to need to learn about this game. So there's a great book, like Julius Boros wrote the book in like the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
And it was called Swing Easy, Hit Hard. And basically, the book was just broken down into a couple of chapters, you know, like what, you know, how clubs are made and shafts and just, you know, all the stuff, all that stuff was kind of out the window because it was like forged irons with bamboo shafts. Like,
right.
Okay,
right.
Forget about that. None of that makes sense. But he just spoke to the principles of when you hit an iron, this is how you need to hit the ball. Mm-hmm. Right? And when you hit a driver or a wood, this is how you need to adapt your swing differently to hit the ball. When you're putting, this is how you need to, you know, and all these different
things. Swings.
And it was just the basic, but he basically took the physics of making contact with a ball and broke it down into very common language.
Okay.
And I would say, like, for somebody who's like, oh, I want to learn how to golf. Like, I want to learn how to, like, lawn dart a golf ball onto a green. You need to read that book. Because it's just the simplest explanation mm-hmm. of how to pinch a ball between the club and the turf.
Right.
So that when it gets to the green, it either holds or checks.
Right.
Like, that's it.
Yep.
And the difference between, you know, the roundness of your iron backstroke and the long, sweeping woods backstroke, you know? And it's just very basic. And I'm like, you can change the entirety of your game if you understand these fundamental things.
Yeah, just
the But nobody, like, now there's the Golf Channel and, you know, all this other
YouTube.
Stuff. But yeah, we had 6 channels and rabbit ears on our TV. We didn't, you know, have all that. But when I read that book, I was like, whoa, this is
like actually getting into the nuances of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And now recently I was watching on Amazon, they have This Is Football, I think it's called. It's a documentary and it's about football, right? You know, like the global phenomenon known as soccer. And they have these guys that do statistical analysis of Messi.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right? So there's a whole episode just on Messi. And they do statistical analysis of Messi and what makes him so great. Right? So when you say Pele, right? I would bet that people probably have gone back and looked at it. But one of the things that they say that is significantly different between Messi and everyone that plays against him is the number of steps that he takes in the same amount of space as someone else. Would you guess that he takes more or less steps?
I would say he takes more steps.
He actually takes significantly more steps. Sometimes as much as 4 to 1.
Really?
In the same amount of space.
Because he's trying to position.
Because he's constantly trying to change his direction.
Okay.
And if you take one big long step, the guy says, you can't change directions when you're in the air.
That's true.
And the other thing that he does is when he runs with his feet very low to the ground. He doesn't really bring his knees up very high.
Okay.
So that his feet, so that when he wants to make an adjustment, there's less distance for him.
Okay.
Right? Whether or not it's a taught behavior, a learned behavior, or just a natural behavior, it's one of those things that make him who he is.
And incrementally better than everybody else.
Right. So then I say to myself, like, oh, okay. You know, can I apply that to my game? Can I teach that to my boys? Like, is there a time where I could say, like, hey, when you're in this situation, you should be, you know, doing like that. Like, so like the physics of that, like that kind of stuff, like really energizes me. And then there's another episode on the, like, it's basically like luck.
Oh, how luck
affects the game.
Well, I always say, so I do landscape photography, and everybody's like, wow, that's such a great image. You know, how did you get this or how did you get that? And I always say luck is where preparation and opportunity meet. Yeah. Right? So I prepared, anticipating something there, and the opportunity comes up, and that's what I call luck, because you need to be able to prepare for it. I mean, look, is something going to drop out of the sky at some point? Yeah, but it's pretty random that you're going to get that shot, you know?
Right.
If you're just pointing your camera, you know, at a landscape, it's very rare that you're going to get the bolt of lightning, right? But if you're going specifically for that, you're preparing for it, you know what settings to put on, you know where you want to be, and then when the opportunity presents itself, that's where the luck comes in. Yeah. So
it's kind of like that. I know Gary Player didn't coin the phrase, but the more I practice, the luckier I get.
Yeah, right? Yeah, right? Same thing.
Yeah. So.
All right, well, good. So we appreciate you being on today.
Again. It's awesome. Always awesome. Love it.
You still want to call this the international edition?
You know, so when we hashtag this puppy, we have to put the RR in front of the MIMIB.
What's the RR?
Real Rob.
The real Rob. I'm going to have to write this down.
RRMIMIB. Because there's already an MIMIB hashtag, and I don't want to be associated with that in any way, shape, or form.
It would
do a disservice to all the good work that we've done here.
So we do RRMIB.
MIMIB.
MIMIB. Oh my gosh. This is a hot mess. RRMIMIB. Did I say that right?
That's it.
Do you still want it the international edition, or you want it the randomizer?
I like the randomizer.
All right, let's do the randomizer. Randomizer edition. All right, good. Well, thanks for being on the episode.
It was awesome.
Hopefully we get a chance to do one again. It's always great connecting with you. You're a great guest. I appreciate your insights. Again, you don't see this list ahead of time.
So no. Who knew we would be talking about Wax in the City?
I'm giving you Wax in the City.
The volume markings of red solo cups.
And lips.
And see, like, we've all learned something today.
I hope my audience got something from this.
I have learned something today.
All right, good. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in into this episode of the Off the Top of My Head podcast. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please reach out to OTTOMHpodcast@gmail.com. That's OTTOMH podcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks for listening. Until we connect again, all my best and bye for now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Off the Top of My Head podcast. Who will I interview next? What will the topic be? And where will I record the episode? Please subscribe to be notified when a new episode is posted on your selected listening platform. Off the Top of My Head podcast, a podcast about anything and everything.